reality, I would play Bruce Springsteen for everything.
Sure.
Bruce Springsteen is to me what the Stones are to Scorsese. He sparks creativity. If he ever listens to my show, thank you, my friend. You've given me a lot of gifts. I still want more. I'm greedy. All right. It's the big show, SP Podcast. Josh Ricardo, the one, the only, the magician, the tone setter. I used to go by the letter CTP when I first started stand-up. And it stood for the Crooked Tooth Pimp, because I had very bad teeth. And I considered myself a ladies' man, which was absolutely ridiculous. Anyways, onward and upwards, as we say. My guest today is an LA-based comedian on the rise. The guy is very funny. I first met him. He was referred to me when I was looking to cast the part of the younger boyfriend in Dating on Set, Season 2. And the dude just absolutely fit the mold, and he was great. And really humble and gracious. So, sorry, that's my email making sounds because I'm a fucking unprofessional fuckwad. But it's a free podcast, so whatever. And his name's Jay Light. Guy's awesome. Jay and I have been friends a while now. Jay's been really good to me when I go out to LA. Helping me out with finding, you know, places to get up. Because for those of you who don't know, as a comic, I have some things going on, but nowhere near enough to warrant walking into clubs and going, put me up, I'm very funny. So Jay's always been really helpful. That being said, I didn't know a lot of Jay's story. Jay's a pretty private dude, or, you know, he's not like a guy that's going to share all this shit. So I had to actually get him face to face for him to kind of open up. And he's very interesting. Interesting background, interesting guy. We did the interview in Venice Beach, California. For those of you who know Hulk Hogan, that was his fake birthplace when he would be introduced to the ring. My buddy lives out there who I was staying with, so we did it from his place, and it was awesome. So any sounds you hear, those are the sounds of Venice Beach, bro. Anyways, Jay was great. We did it a while ago. Jay, thank you. You're going to like it. Listen to Jay. Oh, yeah, baby.
Woo.
Slam Pick Podcast, Josh Ricardo. You know me. You know the man. You know the game. Mm-hmm. You know the game I play. And I'm a lucky man, because not only am I in Venice Beach, California, where Hulk Hogan is from.
Beautiful Venice.
But I have a good friend of mine, a hilarious comic, a guy of epic proportions, Jay Light.
Hi, guys.
What's up, dude?
Oh, not a lot, man.
I got a little lemonade.
I see that. Fine Southern California eatery. What'd you get over there?
I got a blood orange lemonade. It's phenomenal.
I'm a big fan of the cucumber mint.
So you know the establishment.
Oh, I'm very familiar with lemonade. Very familiar with the three portion plate with the buttermilk chicken breast and green goddess dressing on the side, if you will.
So for those of you that don't recognize Jay's voice, those of you that are Dating on Set subscribers.
Stuff.
I can't talk today.
It's that sweat, man.
I know.
Sweat's getting
dying
in your vocal cords.
Season 2, Jay plays a really great character. I'm not going to blow it for you, so watch.
You should watch.
And it's funny because he's talking about lemonade, and he looks like a guy that would love lemonade.
Oh, I love it. See? It all fits.
All you look perfect. Like a guy like, underground, you'd be like Lemonade Man. Because like your whole world would be lemonade.
Oh, not or even underground, guy. Above ground.
Above
I'm very
ground
above
lemonade.
Ground with my lemonade love. I need to go underground with it.
So to give context to the audience, I met Jay via a friend of ours named Brian Moses. I said, you know, I'm looking for this character, you know, I'm looking for this part. I want to cast like a guy who's pretty funny, has some improv background, but also kind of looks nerdy, mm-hmm. which is in. You're so in.
Very in.
You're very in.
Very castable.
And I said, all right, well, who do you got? And he goes, my buddy Jay is awesome. Talked to Jay for a hot minute, and he was really cool. And then we became friends, and now for the last year, every time I'm here, I see Jay and do his awesome show, kind of sketchy comedy show, which is great. In Silver Lake.
Fun little show. Been running that about 2 years and change now, which is crazy.
So you've been doing stand-up for how long?
I've been doing stand-up this October will be my 6th year of taking this stand-up business seriously.
And where are you from?
From Dallas-ish, grew up in the suburbs.
So why not Austin?
I think part of that's because I didn't start out in Texas. I started my comedy career in North Carolina when I was in college.
Are you a Tar Heel?
No, a Phoenix of Elon University.
What do they specialize in, the Elon?
You know what?
The Elon.
They have,
is it Elon or Elon?
Elon. They hate what
transgender
I
people. What
they,
are they?
They're very progressive at Elon, actually. They were a very big, like, they have a huge business school, and they have a very, now it's getting bigger and more prominent, communications school, which is what I majored in when I was in school there. I was in their very fancy media arts and entertainment
What's
program.
Communications? Is that like you'll never get a job type of major? Or
it's,
is it like?
For them, it's a, you're going to get a really low-paying job major. Because it's journalism, advertising, which I guess it's probably more lucrative. Media arts and entertainment, which is like TV, film, radio. And then they had one called communication sciences, which is just research. So all very low-paying jobs. I have a lot of people who I went to school with who were in that school who were journalism majors. Our major was basically like nobody did our major at all.
When you do, so is it creative? That would be classified as creative.
Oh, yeah.
Communications,
for sure.
Right?
For sure.
Creative always equals low-paying job, by the way.
Yeah.
Or no
very,
money at all.
Pretty much. Very creative. Lots of writing classes. Yeah. Lots of production classes, and then we had a TV station. I was the host of our game show.
You look like you could be like an anchor.
I see, that's the thing. I thought I was going to be a news guy. I thought it was going to be like broadcast news, work on like the Today Show or something.
You know what's so funny is that if you look at the broadcast news guys, they're fucking handsome, man. Like in New York City, my buddy Steve Lacey, there's a shout out for you, Steve. I know you love that shit. He's like a great looking guy. He's like a perfect looking man. And there's no way you could be like an interesting-looking dude. Like me, I got like a weird Elmo nose. There's no way.
You'd be a good Vice News anchor.
What's Vice?
Or like MTV
Oh,
news.
Yeah, Vice.
Yeah.
I'd be like the Kurt Loder type.
Yeah, you can be an alternative news channel anchor. But yeah, I thought I was going to go into broadcast news, and then I got...
So you wanted to be on camera originally.
Yeah.
You've always wanted,
to be
on camera.
An anchor or a reporter or something, and then I got to the news program on school campus. What all these words... I got into the program one day, went to see how the news was made, and I hated it.
Wanted to jump off a bridge?
I didn't even sign up for it. I just was like, you know, I'm going to cut my losses before I even have
So you knew
lose.
Right away then?
Oh, yeah.
See, because so I'll do news when I go to different cities, right? And it never strikes me as fun for them.
That's what I felt.
I never get the vibe like, oh, we're killing it. It's all, you know.
That's pretty much exactly how it felt for me when I saw it. It just seemed very stressful. A lot of yelling and a lot of very fast movement. That's what I liked about working on a game show.
On a game show.
I was the host of our game show on campus for three years.
What was the name of the game show?
Win Stuff.
Roofie people? Name. Was that the name of the Roofie Your Friends?
It was the frat game show that I ran. It was very low stress. The hardest thing to deal with every week was honestly finding contestants because we kept that basically. That was the hardest thing to do. We couldn't
why is
find
that? No, so
the
no
last minute.
Why?
Because we usually had to do something that was like, oh, we have a theme, so it's like all people from the same organization on campus.
Oh.
And for whatever reason, people don't want to be on a game show in college. I don't know why.
It's odd. I feel like college kids would love that.
Right? When I was in college, or even before being in college, I just wanted to be on The Price is Right. Or Jeopardy.
Are you sure you're not touched?
I was actually in the contestant pool for Jeopardy as a teenager. I could have been on Teen Jeopardy.
Are you any good at Jeopardy?
When I was watching it regularly, yeah.
So you look smart, but are you as smart as you look?
I'm probably a little dumber now than I'm out of college. But I was pretty, you know, I got good grades. I was a... mostly A's and a handful of B's. I'm really dumb at math. Math is not anywhere near my strong suit.
So what are you, like an English guy?
I was English, history. I liked science, but again, math started to worm its way into science, and I was like, well, I'm getting right out of this. No thank you.
So you go from Dallas where you're... So growing up in Dallas, Dallas is a big city, but it's pretty conservative still, right?
Pretty conservative, and it was... broken up, you know, there's Dallas and Fort Worth are like the Metroplex is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was in the middle of the Metroplex. So I was in a little suburb called Colleyville, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Very small city, but a big public school. We had something like, oh man, we almost, like, my college had like 4,000 students. My
high school, really, hard to get laid at that college?
Had 2,000 in the entire high school.
Oh, so it's a huge,
huge high school, yeah. Small college.
Yeah,
very easy to get laid. In
really.
College, so. We had a ridiculous woman to man ratio on campus. We were like 60% female, 40% male.
Was it a little incestual then, because it's so small?
Yeah. Well, because I was in the Greek life scene too. I was in a fraternity.
Oh.
So we had there's a lot of in no uncertain terms,
cross-sorting,
sisterly kind of
cross-sorting.
Going on. Oh yeah.
Is that an adjective? Cross-sorting?
I don't even know.
Not necessarily crossing the swords, because you're not double-teaming anybody, but your swords.
Well, I knew people who double-teamed.
Sure.
Girls.
But your swords might have stirred the same pudding, if you will.
Eskimo brothers.
The old Eskimo brothers.
We were in the camped out in the same igloos.
The old pudding stirs, if you will.
My igloo became very large by the end of my time at Elon.
Are you referring to your penis size now, Jay? Is this what we're talking about? I've seen you in your underwear, my friend.
You have.
Ladies, look. Go look.
See me in my underwear?
Hit him up.
You see me pretend to get a butt plug?
Hit him up.
My butt.
He's very open-minded. So, are you part of a... I remember I was part of a... Junior high, I was part of the Croc Crew.
The Croc Crew?
Because the name of the junior high, it was very ghetto. In fact, it was so ghetto, they bust more ghetto kids in to my school.
Okay.
And it was called Ray Kroc Middle School, named after the guy who started McDonald's. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Great, great fast food chain.
Amazing. Just the top shelf. Very organic. So I was a nerdy kid, weirdo kid, good at sports, but very shy.
Okay.
And I decided to join the Kroc Crew, which was the school's news broadcast team.
Ah.
And this is my first ever celebrity sighting on me. I was getting dressed because I was, you know, you would, what we would do is we'd film little segments and then you would broadcast them. Everyone had a TV,
mm-hmm.
so every homeroom got a tape of the broadcast.
But not a live broadcast.
No. It was taped.
Air later.
Exactly. It was edited together, and that was part of our job, is to learn how to edit and shoot and be on camera. So I was an anchor of the Kroc Crew, and after it aired on Mondays, the next day, after the first broadcast, I was getting dressed in PE, and this Mexican hardcore gangster dude who had a mustache already, and he's like 12, he looks at me while I'm getting dressed, and he goes, "Hey, aren't you that faggot from Kroc Crew?" And that was, that's what it is to be a celebrity, folks.
Hey, man, your heart must have grown 3 sizes that day. That's
so
amazing.
My point about that, bringing that story up, not only to make myself feel shitty, but also, were you like a young kid that was wanting to be, like, are you a cut-up? Were you a cut-up? Did you want to be?
I had my cut-up moments.
Come from a funny family? Like, what?
Not really.
What serves that urge?
My parents are both in the medical field.
The doctor lights?
My mom's a nurse. My dad's a doctor. Vascular surgeon.
Wow.
My grandparents were pretty funny. On my dad's side, my grandma,
Jews?
Grandpa. No, no Jews in the whole family. Everybody always assumes I'm Jewish.
I was just doing that just to see what you would say.
Everybody always thinks I'm a Jew, and I am not. Though
so
I do
neurotic.
Enjoy challah bread. Challah bread is
very, it's very good.
Delightful.
It's very good. Thank you, Jews.
Yes, very much. Anyway. No, I've learned jokes at a young age, and then in middle school and high school, I was interested in, like, the drama club. I was a theater kid.
Yeah.
So I got involved in that, but I was always hanging out with people who I thought were funnier than me. Oh, and in high school, we had this thing called Pep Boys, which other schools might know as a spirit squad of some kind.
Oh, I thought it was like a doo-wop group.
We
had acapella, like an acapella group, like a rockapella, if you will.
We didn't have any, that was the jazz choir. I was not cool enough to hang out with those kids in their sequin vests. No, we all just had matching cargo shorts and
they can only
red shirts.
See you now, the sequin vest kids.
I had crazy hair back then. I had a non-Jew Jufro.
Oh.
It was popping off.
I'm into that.
But so we
drama would, people got laid, too. Do you remember that? I remember, like, wanting to be in...
You want to talk about incestuous.
The drama club. They bang it out.
Woof.
They get at it because they're always about their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So they can just... And they got those young hormones with emotions and everything.
And
the world's a, and the world a stage
you're
for them?
Hanging out till late at night for a teenager, which is like 9 o'clock at rehearsals together, seeing people, pulling pranks,
changing costumes
in close quarters. Oh, man, steamy.
See, that's the thing. I'm going to tell my kids, if I ever have kids, my son,
I'm gonna be like, hey man, like I played football in high school and college. It was amazing. But there were times in high school that I was going to practice and watching those drama kids like hug on each other and be in their own little group away from everybody. And I was like, that's the way to go.
It was.
Dudes are getting laid, man.
It worked out for
me. They weren't gay because there was gay dudes. And then there was one or two dudes that were straight, and they were tapping, man.
Mm-hmm. See, I had a buddy of mine who was in the high school drama department, and he went to college to drama school. And that's where there are a lot more gay guys in drama school in college.
Because now you're really taking it to another level when you're going to college, right?
Which means that the straight guys get way more laid because all these girls who are just like raging, just like, where are the dicks? And guess what? There's like four of them.
There's four dicks
in the entire class.
And drama girls get hotter and hotter.
Four available dicks, rather.
If you want to know what drama club is for all you rubes, look into your, go turn your TV on.
Go support your local high school's production of Grease.
Yeah, but turn your TV on. Those are all the drama people. So all the hot chicks you see in all these movies and TV shows, they are in the drama club, most likely.
Drama club kids. They moved up.
Period.
But yeah, so Pep Boys.
You were in the Pep Boys.
We made fun of the football players.
You were improv?
We would make skits every week. We would write it out, and then we would go perform it at pep rallies before football games. And so we would basically be like, we would have like half of the kids were in the drama club, so it was all kids who knew how to write and perform. And then the other half were kids who were just close with all the football players, so they would get all the dirt
for
us.
The inside shit, yeah.
And then we would turn that into jokes.
Didn't that get dangerous, though?
Sometimes. We got banned from a couple football fields.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that it would get a little weird because you're kind of doing this in, like, high school is a smaller version of life, right, where everyone's kind of petty,
mm-hmm.
and you get to learn about people's dirt, and then you kind of start shitting on them.
Oh, yeah.
And that's brutal, dude.
We had the most egregious thing that we ever brought up, and we didn't even, that's the thing, we didn't even explicitly bring something up. We just kind of winked at it.
Oh, so you were still able to be subtle.
Yes, but that's the thing. Sometimes we had a very, very high-strung administration. Like, there was one time after our team would score, we would run flags that said our team mascot, Panthers. And one time...
Dylan Panthers?
We were so far ahead of the other team. It was like 49-0.
Yeah.
And we ran pants instead of Panthers. We got banned from the field for the next game because our principal thought we were making fun of her capris.
Really?
Very
high-strung. So everyone's very fucking petty.
Very high-strung. So
very
we
insecure.
Had, there was one time we wrote a skit. It was pretty common knowledge that there are these two guys who were best friends. Neither of them were football players, by the way. They were both wrestlers. And they were like BFFs. They hung out and did everything together. And they had allegedly double-teamed a girl on the 50-yard line of the football field.
Why is that a thing? Why are people so obsessed with fucking on the 50-yard line? Well, first of all, it's grass. It's gross. And it's a 50-yard line.
People just want to fuck in weird places.
Oh, I'm a very freaky guy. I'm all about being freaky, but the 50-yard line doesn't seem that interesting to me.
It's a very high school movie kind of place to fuck, I think.
Fair enough.
But anyway, so they, you know, we made a joke at the end of one of our skits one week that was like, it showed these two guys, and they were like, what kind of crazy adventures are we going to get into next week? And the principal shut us down the next week. She's like, you cannot do anything about these two guys. We're like, they're friends. They just hang out. Who knows what they're going to do next week? We don't know. We haven't
figured it out yet. But everyone
already,
so you're alluding to that incident.
We were alluding,
and everyone knew about it.
But we knew we couldn't actually have anything about them double teaming girl. But we were just going to be like, oh, this will be a fun little goof. We'll see. We'll get everybody thinking and figure out what they're going to do next week, and we'll just make it like some dumb Scooby-Doo shit.
The old double team.
But yeah, that was we got in big trouble for that one.
A lot of guys in high school double team. I don't remember.
I don't think so.
I remember. I come from a very scumbag place. So I remember dudes getting a hooker once when we were all playing a game in Vegas and everyone doing her. But I don't consciously remember a double team happening that I knew about.
This was the only one that I knew of. And this was one of those ones the entire school found out about it,
yeah.
too.
What a bummer for that girl.
We had a bigger problem. We had a fair amount of sex scandals in my high school. Now I think
like
about
what?
It. We had a girl who was a cheerleader. Who sent out a naked picture, and it spread like wildfire.
She looked good?
Yeah, she did.
Good
she
for
was,
her.
She was part of a hot family, hot older sister who became a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader later on.
Awesome.
I think she herself became a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader at some
point. So you're a few years younger than me, so you kind of came along where people started to get cell phones in school. See, I wasn't around. No one had a cell phone in school.
I got my first cell phone at like age 15. And the only reason, that's the thing, my parents were very, my mom specifically, very averse to me having a cell phone. Mm-hmm. She was like, you don't need one. What do you need that for? And I was like, but all my friends have them. She's like, you don't need one. And sure. Then I got a job working as a baseball umpire, and so I needed one so I could call her to come pick me up when games were over.
So for high school or for Little League?
Little League.
So that was a job.
Yeah.
And you, how many games a week would you ump?
Like two or three. It made like much? $30.
$30 a game?
No, per week.
Total.
I'd get $10 for a game.
And then a Snack Shack, like a Snack Shack goodie?
I'd get like a thing of popcorn.
A little treat?
Sometimes the guys who would run the games would let me get the leftovers of their kid snacks. So I'd get like a Capri Sun every now and again.
So you're like this 15, 16-year-old kid. And are kids giving you shit when you're trying to do?
No, because I was umpiring. When you start out as an ump for Little League, you have to start out at T-ball. So the kids don't know anything that's going on. They're like 8 or 9 years old. It was the coaches that would give me shit.
Oh, coaches are dipshits.
The coaches were, I almost threw a guy out one time. I was like, I might have been younger than that. I was like 14. And I almost ejected a coach from a game. I mean, he was like in his 40s yelling at me. And I was like, come on, man.
I once did a T-ball game. They used to let the players, at least let the players do the umping.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's even a thing. But I was umping a game that my brother was playing in, and he ran outside the baseline, and I called him out, and he flipped. He threw his bat at me, threw his fucking helmet. It's like a 7-year-old kid. This kid's psycho. And I was never allowed to ump.
Real problem.
Seriously, PEDs. And I was never allowed to ump again. Did you have to learn the rules?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had already played baseball. That was the one sport decent at.
You think that really qualifies you to call balls and strikes and outs and all
pretty
that shit?
Pretty much. I mean, I had to figure out a strike zone. But that's the thing. I didn't even really have to figure out a strike zone. Because, again, T-ball.
What was the oldest you ever umped?
Coach pitch, which was
So
I was like 10 years old.
Okay.
And even then, there's no like official strike zone. You give kids like 6 chances to hit the ball, and then if they miss, then
they get to run to first. This bullshit world we live in.
Exactly.
It's PC bullshit.
Exactly.
You're out. You're out. You fuck. You're out.
Participation trophy nonsense.
I fucking hate it. That's my phone.
Stinger. Oh man.
So you were getting a phone because you had to ump.
Yep.
And did the phone take pictures?
It did. It took some pictures. Very low quality. And then my phone was actually shattered at a baseball game. I took a line drive to my thigh where my phone was in my pocket, and it broke the screen. And
it was an iPhone.
No, this is right before the iPhone came out.
It was a fucking Razor.
So my next phone, I got a fucking Windows phone, like a BlackBerry knockoff.
Like a burner phone that drug dealers would use?
It was like the fanciest phone that a drug dealer might use.
Oh, okay.
And he gave it, and this guy gave it to me. A Jewish guy, come to think of it.
Good for him.
The latest and greatest technology. and he gave me the phone, and then I got
this
an
is
iPhone
how old are you?
That.
16?
My first iPhone was age 16.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was like 15 when I had this other phone.
So you're in school now, phones are everywhere, and this young woman takes a nude selfie,
mm-hmm.
and some
sends it to,
dickhead kid sends it to everybody.
As you know, that was like the first time that I can remember something like that happening, but that shit happens
and
all the time.
What happened to the girl?
She got... Nothing happened. She didn't get like kicked off of the squad.
Well, she shouldn't,
anything.
But whatever. I mean, what do people do?
Her parents freaked out, and her parents were like, "This like can't happen." But that's the thing. Like, nobody got punished for it. I don't think we had a steroid scandal that was way worse. And again, that was another thing where like nobody actually got punished.
That's so. I grew up in San Diego, where football is. Huge. I mean, there are 4 Heisman Trophy winners within a 5-mile radius in San Diego.
Oh, wow.
All from San Diego. I know Florida is very big in football, and I know Texas is fucking
huge.
Rabid. So a lot of these kids were getting into PEDs even as a young age, so
we
in high school.
We had a school-wide steroid problem that branched out to other schools in our area too.
Mm-hmm.
There was one gym that everybody would go and work out at. It was like this. It was like the city's gym for the entire like county that I was in, basically. And so there was a guy there who was selling steroids to the high school football players, and he got caught. And eventually, our school, along with a couple others, but primarily ours, because we were the focus of where the most kids were buying steroids,
mm-hmm.
We made the national news. We made, USA Today, Dallas Morning News did, an in-depth investigative article on us, too, about how we were using, about the steroid problem, and our school got majorly hit. Our football program didn't get revoked or anything, but the program was so bad that our statewide, the governing body for any competition at all said, okay, now you have to drug test your students.
That's crazy.
So
all based off of your school.
All based off of our school.
Jesus.
So even that
must have been rampant with fucking steroids.
So many. And I found most of the team was using steroids. There are a couple schools where it was like, okay, we caught three guys. They caught
90% of the roster.
20% of our starters. Or not even 20%, 20 of our starters. I don't know why I'm saying percentages.
For all you people at home that can't do math or know sports, there's only 22 total starters on a football team, offense, defense.
Yeah.
11 men at a time on the field. So that's
totally,
pretty substantial.
It was a ridiculous amount. And that's the thing. They said not just football, any competitive activity at all.
Yeah.
So I got drug tested one time because I was in theater.
So the Pep Boys got drug tested.
We got drug tested just for being
these sketches are a little too pumped up. I don't know.
These guys aren't
that funny.
They're doing one act plays. How are they getting those costumes changed so fast? Let's check
fucking
and see
test
if they're
them.
Seeing what they're going on.
That light kid has quite a bulge. His balls must be shrinking.
I do remember when I got drug tested, I was in the cafeteria where they made you wait to take a piss with a whole bunch of other. It was basically all football players. And a tennis player and a cheerleader, and they were all like, "What the fuck are you doing here? Did you get your spelling bee? You have to get things for you." I was like, "Actually, yeah."
So you get nerd shamed when you walk in to get your piss test. I love it.
Ugh.
So just to give you guys a heads up, if you hear any noises in the background, I'm in a beautiful condo in Venice, but it just so happens that outside a man is tanning wood.
Is that what he's doing?
He's doing something with wood.
He looks very dirty. He does look like that could be wood stain.
It looks like
shirt.
He needs a neti pot because I have to. I imagine there must be a lot of dust in his nose.
Probably.
So if you hear that, don't get distracted.
I got a lot of dust in my nose right now, man.
Got a neti pot
FYF all weekend.
Yeah, so it was my friend whose house I'm staying in. He was at both nights.
Nice. So was I.
How was it?
It was great. I'm wearing a t-shirt from FYF right now.
Yeah, he's the guy, Jay's the guy that gets a t-shirt and wears it the exact next day. He's like, I'm going to wear it the whole week.
Put the shirt on.
The whole week. He's going to wear it the whole week. He bought five shirts for the whole week.
Oh, yeah. I got...
Was it life-changing? Everyone goes to a concert and they come back life-changed.
It actually, because I saw my favorite band live and I never thought I was going to get
LCD?
To see them live. Yes, sir.
I love LCD.
Never thought I'd ever get to see them live.
Because the dude's old.
They broke up. When I was
LCD sound system.
In college. And they had never come around to where I was, because I was in college in the middle of nowhere in North Carolina.
Yeah.
They didn't really come out and do any touring out there. By that point, they were already big enough that they were doing only major, major cities
and
world tours too.
Yeah.
So they just never hit up.
How did they do? They kill it?
Travel. Oh, they were amazing.
I love those guys.
Fantastic.
Unbelievable. So you're getting piss tested at the Pep Boys.
Yep.
And that's pretty much your extent of performing. And then you go to college and you go, well, I'm going to be on the news. And then you go check out the news, and you go, this is terrible.
Blows.
So at that point, are you kind of disenfranchised with entertainment, or do you pick up right away knowing you want to do a comedy? I mean, I don't know how many people think about stand-up, especially if you're in the middle of nowhere in college.
Well, I've been thinking about doing stand-up before I even went to college. A buddy of mine from high school, a fellow Pep Boy and a fellow drama kid, we were... in New York for spring break as part of the drama club spring break, and he got the book The Comedy Bible, which you may be familiar with.
No.
Very popular, starting off, how to get into comedy kind of book.
Okay.
By this lady named Judy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And it, he was reading it, and it suggested that he get a comedy buddy that he write with, and you go to open mics with, and you hold
mm-hmm.
each other accountable. So I was like, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll volunteer. So that started the very tail end of my senior year of
mm-hmm.
high school.
Of high school?
Yes.
Oh, so out in Dallas you're doing mics.
Not really. That's why I say only 6 years that I've been doing stand-up. Because the first time I got on stage was 8 years ago.
Uh-huh.
But those first 2 years were basically a wash. I didn't get up on stage more than 10 times in those first 2 years.
Okay.
I was writing, and I got a little performance experience under my belt. My first open mic I ever did was October of 2008 at my college. But that's the thing. Like, comedy was something that had interested me, but there was not really an outlet for it in my college, middle of nowhere. No open mics to be found, really, except for, like, one every couple of months. So when I got a car, then I was able to start traveling and going to, like, Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Durham, Greensboro.
Where more of the colleges
were
at.
They had clubs, they had open mics, they had all kinds of places that I could actually go and perform at pretty regularly. And then when I was home in Dallas, I would perform at open mics out there. But even at the time, the Dallas comedy scene was pretty small. There was, like, a club that you could go and perform at.
An improv out there? I know there's an Addison. Addison's
now.
Like
yeah,
Austin,
Addison
though.
Improv is huge. It's very popular in Dallas. And then now they have an Arlington Improv as well.
Oh, cool.
And then there's a chain of clubs called Hyenas in Dallas.
Yeah, I know Hyenas.
They got Hyenas in Dallas, Fort Worth, and Plano, and Arlington. They've got four clubs out there now.
Yeah, Hyenas is all around that mid.
Yeah, I would go and perform at Hyenas as often as I could. But that's the thing. Like, it was.
This is throughout your college career, like the 4 years?
When I would be back home for, like, spring break or winter break or summer break, which I wasn't at home that often for summer break because I was working as a camp counselor, so I was gone.
Not an ump. You didn't make it to the bigs.
No, I quit. Dropped out of umping.
Yeah.
Got
hard,
too many 40
it's a hard
years
racket.
Yelling at me.
It's a hard racket, the umping.
Yeah. But, yeah, and so I did when I was in college still, I didn't know what I wanted to get into. I didn't think that comedy was, like, a viable career at that
it's
point.
It's not.
It's still not, but it's
but
getting more
but
viable.
But you could see it now.
Yeah. But at the time, after I got out of my news fantasy, I was like, "What am I? I guess maybe I'll go into like advertising."
So luckily, you were already kind of doing stand up a little bit, like in a half-assed kind of way.
I
a little
had
bit.
Jokes. I was writing. I was like, "Okay, this
so
is
it wasn't
like something."
It wasn't like a crash to earth when you're. News thing kind of poofed.
And then when I came to Los Angeles my freshman year for a class we did. It was like a month-long class because we did one of those, like, you do two semesters, but you also have like a January semester.
Okay.
So that January term, I came here to L.A., and I saw that there was actually like, oh, there's more careers in the movie business besides like director. Oh, there's like a whole. Then I didn't know anything about producing movies and on like the whole film production side.
Was
so
that
was
part
like,
of the
okay.
class, or is that something you just looked up on your own?
No, it was part of the class. We went.
Oh, really?
We would go to studios and we talked to different people. We talked to people in all walks of life in the industry, and they made me. That trip made me realize, like, oh, there's actually like a career that I could make if I wanted to work in like TV and movies. Follow that path.
How beneficial, man. That's so great.
It's great.
I've been alone the whole ride for the most part. Like everything I've had to learn by trial and error, no guidance or no one ever going, hey, I mean, this is what you can be doing. You know, talk to this guy. I mean, it's taken me years to meet people. I mean, part of it is because I have a terrible sense of relationships, but the other part is like if you don't know where to begin, you're kind of fucked. So you had an opportunity to actually meet and greet something that was totally dedicated to your major.
Right.
And you saw entertainment not just from how the layman sees it, but from the inner workings.
But that's the thing. Like, I saw that and I was like, oh, I could try this. And then when it started time for me to actually like go to do internships and stuff, I applied for so many jobs that I was like, this is a comedy adjacent job, like working for a late night show or working for like College Humor or something like that. And I sent out so many resumes and I got no job prospects in that. The one internship that I ever had in college that actually like I said, two internships that were in the field. One of them was working as a concert photographer.
So real quick, so for an internship, just for people who don't know and for myself, for an internship, you apply while you're in college, and even though your college is in North Carolina, there's a block of that time that's set aside for your internship that you would have moved out here.
Yes.
If you would have gotten it.
But that's the thing. I didn't get any of the jobs here that I applied for. The only job I got in New York that I applied for was a concert photographer job. So and that wasn't anything. I liked photography, but that wasn't something that I was like, this is not going to be my career, I don't think. And then I worked at the Cannes Film Festival.
That's
one
cool.
summer. And that was a really cool experience.
She had to go to France.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Got to work the whole festival.
For 2 weeks or whatever? It's a long festival.
It was about a week and a half, but I was in France for like 3 weeks. Because you start out, you're there for a couple days before the festival starts, get like the lay of the land,
sure.
And find out what your job is.
What was your job?
I was working at the restaurant and event space that we had.
You get close to anybody? See anybody do some dumb shit?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Like known people doing dumb shit?
Yeah. And then I did plenty of dumb shit too, though. That's the thing.
How do you do dumb shit where you're working at an event like that where you're kind of like the grunt?
Well, that's the thing, because when I had my time off, I would just be just, because Cannes is a huge party town, so I would just be getting
ripped.
Completely just like gone.
Are you sober now?
Yeah.
Okay, so
sober about a year.
Did you have a problem? Is that why? Or are you
yes.
just. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It was too much. But that's the thing, like back then, I couldn't recognize it. That's the only thing. It took me.
You're really
a
young,
good,
though.
Like 7 years, 7-8 years of hard drinking.
You must have gone really hard.
Yes, I did.
To go into the program. I mean, that's crazy. Because you're a young dude.
Yep.
For you to know, like, I got an issue.
Yeah.
That's. Usually people don't figure that out until like they're 35, 40.
Well, when I finally picked up on it, I was like, I should stop before it gets worse.
Because
I knew it could get worse.
So you're being proactive.
Yes.
Do you have addiction running your family?
Yes.
Because I have, the listeners know that I've been to a sex addicts meeting before. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily my story being told there. I'm probably more slaw, sex love addict.
Gotcha.
Actually, in reality, I think I'm just somebody that, this is 3 years of therapy, folks. I'm not just making this shit up. Is it just does too much of anything that makes me feel good? So at any given time, I could be drinking too much.
You could probably find some solace in an AA meeting.
Easily. Anything. I could do anything. If it feels good, I could do it too much.
Yeah.
I could eat everything on the table. But
that's just how the addict brain works.
Yeah,
too.
It's the way it works.
Yeah. But I have addiction running in both sides of my family, it turns out. At the time that I started really like delving into, like, do I have a problem?
Mm-hmm.
It was very apparent on my dad's side. My biological grandfather, who I never met, was an addict, alcoholic,
mm-hmm.
Died in rehab, I'm pretty sure. And that's the thing. Like, I found when I was moving out to LA, like, I this is something my parents had never talked to me about. And I found letters from my great-grandmother to her son, my biological grandpa, that was like letters that she sent to him while he was in rehab. That was
Whoa.
Like, please work on this so your family needs you. We need you to be healthy. And I was like,
just pleading with him.
Yeah, I'd never seen anything
That's
like that.
That's heavy shit.
Mm-hmm. And that was before I moved out to LA. So I still had a good 3-ish years.
So you were here for about 3 years and change before you go,
yeah,
I need help.
It was after Labor Day, so my year's anniversary is coming up.
Oh, congratulations, man.
Thanks.
I think, like, it's so funny that you move out here, and usually people are so broke when they move out here young. Just like I know New York City, it's a really hard place to make it, make ends meet. Drinking is expensive.
Yes.
I didn't drink till I was 26, so I didn't have my first drink. And now that I make some cash, I realize when I look at my credit card statements, I'm like, fuck, dude, it's like $100 a night if you really go out drinking.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I came out, I was fortunate enough to have a good, like, graduation nest egg.
Yep.
And I basically wasted all of that.
On drinking.
So much of it. I came out here, I spent a little bit of money on, like, a couple months' rent to cover an internship that I was working, and I wasn't actually making any money.
Uh-huh.
A little bit on, like, gas and food and furniture and shit. But most of that money wound up going towards drinking.
To the sauce.
Yeah.
When you, it's really interesting, because a lot of comics I've noticed are getting sober.
Mm-hmm. It's the age of the sober comic.
It's awful. I really love the dysfunctional dirtbag, but I get that it has to come to that full circle.
Well, that's the thing. You can still be a dysfunctional dirtbag if you're not drinking.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't take drink to do that.
You're just much more aware of it.
So it's hard because you don't do the road a lot yet. You're based here. You're
right,
doing writing gigs, and you're like making a go of it in the industry.
Yep.
You haven't started touring just yet.
Yeah,
I've
done a little bit of touring, but mostly my comedy career has kept me confined to L.A.
So I'm on the road pretty frequently. That's where I probably drink the most, is on the road. Because I get bored, I'm alone, I'm with the crowd afterwards. It's pretty great that you are a year in, because at least you have more of a handle on it now. before you start having to tour a lot? Because I feel like that is, if you're an addict, how do you keep your shit so disciplined? Because you're in the comedy industry, like especially the Comedy Store, which is kind of like a big party.
Yep.
You know?
I go to meetings. I have a network of people who are also sober that I talk to. I make sure that people who I'm with know that I'm sober. That helps out a lot. And things just kind of work out.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that I have to really worry about as much as I did when I was first really, really fresh in sobriety.
Yeah.
But now I'm starting to, like, get a better handle on it as far as now I can tell, like, okay, this is something that I'm in a situation where I will feel uncomfortable. What are some things I can do to make myself feel comfortable that don't require me to drink?
Okay.
And a lot of that is just not isolating myself mm-hmm. and not being – and not just being – honestly, being lame. Because that was the thing. Like, I always wanted to be I was kind of like a chameleon, and I kind of wanted to just fit into whatever group I was with.
Yeah.
I can do that fine without drinking.
Uh-huh.
I can be a social butterfly, but I just thought that that was what I needed to have in order to be the social butterfly. Now I just figured out, oh, I can just talk to people and be interested in people,
so
or at the very least act like I'm interested.
That's really interesting. So you're saying that getting out in front of that hang up just it means to engage.
Mm-hmm.
To engage socially.
Engaging socially really helps out for me. That's
I think it, for a lot of people it would. For me, I think it would too, because I think that's when I start to kind of lose it is when I'm like, well, fuck, I feel really alone. Mm. I feel like no one wants to talk to me. And instead, I should just probably jump in and start chatting it up. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
When you – it's so fucking crazy. Like this, I don't know why I'm like fascinated by people who are in recovery. I think it's just a really interesting – place to be when you're trying to make it in an industry where drinking is so accessible.
Yep.
And
encouraged.
And totally encouraged. I mean, if I could tell you how many shots a week are bought for me at a gig, I mean, it's probably 10 to 20 shots depending upon what club I'm playing that mm-hmm. people go, oh, shot, let's get a shot. Like, it's crazy.
I mean, I know plenty of guys who have famous people, famous comedians who have their whole entire persona is based around
drinking.
Them being drinking and them being drunks.
Yeah, that's crazy, right?
Which, you know, it works for them.
Yeah.
I am glad it works for them.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
That's the thing I had to really come to accept is, like, it's not a bad thing that I can't drink. It's just, it doesn't work for me.
Doesn't work for you.
It's fine. It's okay. I'm okay with that.
What's something, like, what was, like, the, was there a rock bottom for you?
It was what we call in recovery a high bottom.
Okay.
It was, I had a series of events happen, but my actual, like, my last night that I was like, okay, I gotta quit drinking. It was Labor Day.
Yeah.
Last year, I was at a party, like a barbecue kind of shindig.
You've been doing stand-up for about 3 years at this point now, probably, around this time?
At this point, this was last year, so it was
about
five.
Okay, yeah.
The beginning of the day, I was like, okay, I'm not going to drink. I have work tonight, because I had a shift at the store that night, and mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not gonna drink. And then, as soon as a beer was offered to me at, like, 10 o'clock, I was like, sure, yeah, why not? And I drank that, and then by the time I'm supposed to go to work, I'm like 7 or 8 beers deep. I get to work, and before I clock in, someone's like, hey, take a shot. And I was like, yeah. And they pour, for employees, they pour doubles
sure.
instead of just a regular shot. So I have that. And then I'm on the clock, and I start to feel sick because mm-hmm. I had smoked weed as well.
Bad move.
At some point during the day.
While drinking, I've done that.
Get a good old cross buzz going on. I had to get somebody to cover the rest of my shift.
Because you were done.
I was like, I'm not going to be able to finish the shift out. Mm-hmm. And so then, but as soon as I got my shift covered, I got my shift drink, and then I drank that. And then someone else had a drink that they did not, that, like,
so instead of going home
back,
to yak.
I drank that drink too. And then I did my set, because employees get a set on Mondays.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and then I went home. And then I got, as soon as I got home, there was like a PBR in the fridge. And I opened that, and literally as soon as I heard the pop top open up, I was like, oh, I shouldn't drink this. And I put it down, and then I just kind of stared at it for a minute, and I was like, I should do something.
I can't just let it sit there.
Yeah. Well, then I called, my current roommate, a friend of mine, and she picked me up, And she drove me around, and I was like, I think I have to quit drinking.
So you were still standing?
And
you
were still sitting down at that point.
I mean, you were still, like, coherent?
Yeah. So I had a pretty good tolerance.
Yeah.
Because
I thought you were going to yak. And that's why you quit. That's why you had to get your shift covered.
I just felt like I was going to.
So after you had the next drink, you were like, oh, okay, now I'm better.
Yeah. I think I had a Red Bull and something, like a Red Bull vodka maybe.
And you got back.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, after that, I was like, I got to do something about this.
Yeah, because you couldn't stop.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I had not had a lot of experiences like that over the course of my drinking career.
Mm-hmm.
That was a thing that had started to happen towards the end of it. And I knew that if I didn't stop, it was going to get worse.
Do you think you're better on stage now? Do you think you're...
Oh, yeah.
Because you're just more focused and clear.
I'm sharper. My writing's better. I'm a lot more able to connect with the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a wall up.
Yeah.
The thing that was the hardest thing to get used to was going up. I didn't realize how much I used drinking as a crutch to get over stage fright and nerves and that kind of stuff before I got on stage. So getting used to
the pain of going up,
all the like the nerves and anticipation, I realized that it wasn't necessarily fear, but it was just me being anticipating what was about to happen. I was like, okay, I can turn this into something good.
Yeah.
And I'll be fine. And it took me probably like 3 or 4 months to get really, really comfortable
mm-hmm.
back performing again. But that was the thing. Like, I had to get up as much as I could and perform multiple times a night.
Yeah.
As often as I could, just so that I could get back, have my sea legs back again.
Sure.
Basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing, dude. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're coming up on that year.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Great. I haven't had a drink in a year almost.
You ever miss it? When do you miss it? Like, when is the moment where, like, what would have been the times in the last year that you're like, I could really love a beer right now?
I have had bad nights at work.
Yeah.
When I see people that don't finish a drink at work, because I used to go finish people's drinks. When I see people who don't finish a drink, I'm like, look at all this money you're wasting. This is like
a
$14 drink. Well, it started out being how broke I was, and then I was just like, I just wanted to drink. So I was like, you're not going to finish that $15 margarita you just bought?
So you're justifying by being like, I'm just fucking not wasteful.
Money. Yeah, exactly. I'm frugal. So yeah, that was...
I'm not Jewish. That's why I both thought you were Jewish. You're drinking everyone's
drinks. Drinking other drinks, but no manischewitz. That's the thing. I'm finishing all the wine. But yeah, so that's the thing. Like, back to FYF, I was there this weekend. And I forgot for a moment that I was probably part of, like, the 5% of people who were at the festival who were sober.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm enjoying this just as much as I would have, if not more so, than if I were on drugs
or drunk
right now. And it was great. I was like, this is perfect.
Awesome.
This is fine.
Well, congratulations, man.
Thank you.
You're great. Where are you at? Tell people how they can find you.
You can look me up on all the social media, pretty much, at Diet J.
Diet J. Okay.
And my website is jlightcomedy.com. You can
mm-hmm.
see my show dates there.
And Lights, LIGHT.
Mm-hmm. Performing a lot in Los Angeles, but starting to get a little more road work these days.
So check them out.
Cool. If you're in LA, you can see me every Monday at the Comedy Store for Potluck. Pretty much every Tuesday at the Roast Battle. I'm part of the pre-show there if I'm not battling. And then every Thursday, the Kind of Sketchy Comedy Show.
Awesome, man. Well, I love you, brother. We're like
Josh,
brothers.
Dude, we're like brothers, man.
We are. We're brothers in arms.
We see each other in our underwear.
That's true.
Very brotherly.
Yeah, we have been doing some underwear stuff together. It's very, very attractive. But thanks for coming on, man.
Out of the sweat.
I'm actually feeling better now.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're not looking better.
That's Jay Light, baby. Jay, thank you, my friend. You're a great guy. Funny guy. Solid dude. Solid motherfucker. I really hate living by a train. I mention this every show, and it's so fucking old. Go follow Jay Light, Twitter, Instagram, all that fancy stuff. Very, very, very fun guy. Good follow. I hate it. I can't stand it. I've been shut up. See, I have all these things on, all these devices. You know, at this point, I don't even fucking care that you can hear them. This is life. This is real life. I'm living it. I'm in the midst of it. It's been a weird week. All right. So, here's the deal. I leave for Italy, and I think it's tomorrow. And I'm gone for like 3 weeks. So, the show's going to be on a 3-week hiatus. So, sorry. I mean, we've been getting a lot of downloads, too. So, now... it's a, this is like basically the way my career works out. We get all these downloads. This stuff's kind of picking up. I mean, not picking up on a level where, oh, I'm missing out on the huge fame and fortune, but enough to where, oh, I have some momentum, but I got to go. I got to leave for 3 weeks. But I'm going to Italy, so they can't really bitch and moan. It's just been one of those weeks, man. Shit falls through. Now I'm telling you about it because I have no one else to talk to. It's literally just you. So at least you know you have that. You've done your good deed for the day. Jay Light, once again, my guest. Thank you, my friend. You're a good dude. Love your story. Love who you are. And love yourself. You can always follow the show at Slam Pig Podcast, hashtag SP Podcast, if you want to see it trending. Also, you can follow me at Josh Ricardo, JOSHACCARDO. I'm assuming you know that already if you're listening to the show because my name's on the show title. Instagram at Slam Pig Podcast. We also do a Snapchat. And yeah, email the show, slampigpodcast@gmail.com for any questions. I'll totally answer them. I got nothing to do. All right. Enjoy the rest of your week. I'll be missing you guys. Goodbye.